This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay, no insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Nerd! Association.
Nerd!
Association.
Nerd!
Association.
Nerd!
Association.
That was such uber ponage.
Hello, fellow nerds from the studios of WBNS FM in Columbus, Ohio. This is the Nerd Association podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Barnett.
And I'm your other host, Mark Finch. And we are joined by a special guest this week, JD T-Bone Smith, which I don't think I've ever said your name like that, but
thank you.
Of Common Man and T-Bone fame, which you can hear on 97.1 The Fan, weekdays 3 to 6. He's been on here before, and if you're a big fan of Nerd Association, you probably know what subject matter we're probably going to talk about today, but I'll throw it over to T-Bone for now.
That's correct. Usually when I show up, it's either going to be Batman-related or this other universe, and today it's the other universe, which is actually a fairly big universe, so I'll ask
you... In more ways than one.
Yes. I will ask you, gentlemen... What do you think of when I say Ben Kenobi?
I think worst alias in the Witness Protection Agency of all time.
Doesn't sound, yeah, old Ben doesn't sound anything like Obi-Wan.
Like, Obi-Wan is a very unique name, so yeah, change that, but unless Kenobi is like Smith or Williams or Johnson in the Star Wars universe, which, granted, I guess I don't know for sure that it's not, it seems like changing your name to Ben Kenobi is still pretty obvious.
We joked before coming on to record that, you know, maybe Uncle Owen just like didn't care to learn his, like, I'm not going to remember that. I'm just going to call you Ben.
It's like we saw a thing on the screen when we were coming in here. It was an anniversary for Hakeem Olajuwon. It's like he goes into hiding. Ben Olajuwon.
Yeah. Actually, maybe he could have just gone with, hi, my name is Ken. Ken Obi. They'll never catch on. They'll never get it. They'll never know.
Even then, though, like, Obi is the last part of his name and the first part of his name.
Wait, his name is Obi?
His name is Obi-Wan Ken Obi.
Yeah.
So it's not quite a palindrome, but...
No, but it has that sort of, it smacks of that. Anyway, guys, we're talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Is that what it is? Okay,
long drawn-out introduction to state the obvious. But yes, we're talking about the Disney Plus original series Obi-Wan Kenobi, which, as of this recording, just wrapped up mere hours ago.
Hours ago.
I guess everything's hours ago, technically, but that's true. Mere hours ago.
Depending on which one of us it is,
it was multiple different types of hours. Like, for you, what, 15 hours?
And 10 hours. And I will admit, I have watched it three times today.
This is, again, what happens whenever we talk to Daniel about anything, especially related to Star Wars, but probably with other things too, where sleep. I'm amazed with how much you're able to pack in as far as rewatching these things so quickly. Because I needed
sleep is the answer.
That's right. I needed to process it. You were like, I want to process it three more times.
He did think it was going to be 90 minutes long, so maybe the 51-minute runtime. So he said, okay, I can get this. I had all this time
not to get so far sidetracked, but there were rumors that the finale was going to be basically a full-length movie, and it was not. And I think that's good. I think for
it
good
didn't
reason.
Need to be.
It didn't need to be.
I thought it packed in quite a bit. I thought the series in general packed in quite a bit.
Before we get to that, I kind of want to have you two and then me weigh in on... Obviously, we follow these things professionally, but personally speaking, like, one, did you even know there was an Obi-Wan Kenobi show coming until your buddy Daniel said, hey, there's an Obi-Wan Kenobi show coming? Or was this something that you had any sort of personal excitement about?
I knew it was coming. I would say I had some personal excitement about it. Probably less from like a Star Wars stance, but just like, oh, Ewan McGregor coming back, and he's such a good actor. So that's that's exciting. And then, you know, Darth Vader showing up. Darth Vader's just such a cool character. So anytime he's going to show up in something, you get excited. And I would say I probably was less excited after I didn't enjoy Book of Boba Fett as much. But for me, this beats out Book of Boba Fett.
Oh, I would hand over fist.
I thought it was a lot better. Even though it still might suffer from some of the same issues on the surface, like clearly not being able to, over that course of time, spend the same amount on every set that a movie budget might. And you can see that in some instances. But this one just had a better sense of adventure and a broader scope that you look over that stuff. And I was just enjoying my time watching it, whereas it became more apparent as I was watching Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, I was aware of it mostly because what I do is I will watch the most recent Star Wars thing. And then right after I watch it, I go, ooh, what's the next thing?
Yeah.
And so then that's when I started like, oh, yeah, they're doing a Kenobi thing. And so then wasn't there something like right at the end, maybe like when Book of Boba Fett was over, there was like a now watch the trailer for Kenobi, because I think it like came out sometime. There was like a bigger trailer or something that came out around the end of all that. So they knew what they were doing. They were trying to get you ready for, hey, 5 months from now, 6 months from now, new series. So, yeah, I definitely had some awareness of it from that standpoint, but not from like, you know, 2 years before or whenever it would have been announced.
Yeah. That's Disney's new play. Instead of after credit scenes, they just show the trailer. That's what they did after the Spider-Man movie. They just showed the trailer for Doctor Strange.
I mean, I have to say there are some, in general, there are some situations where you don't need a post-credit scene. And in that case, use it for marketing purposes, because usually even then, even if it is the trailer, like for Doctor Strange, for example, that was the first time people were seeing that trailer. It was still special. It was still the first time you were. Anyway.
But it still feels like, oh, I waited throughout all these credits for it.
No, although I had the problem of the first time I watched and I saw, oh, there's 7 minutes left.
Yeah.
After the, there's got to be an end credit scene. And then I go through and it's like, nope, they're showing you who did the dubbing in France, who did the dubbing in Poland, who did the dubbing in every country that they put this movie on. And I was like, well, that's cool that they're acknowledging those actors and people who made that, but I kept going all the way through it and going, oh, all right. I guess
you're sitting there trying to connect the dots. What do the German voice actors have to do with Kenobi?
I'll be honest. I watched it right when it dropped, and I did not bother to stick around for an end credit scene then. And then when I watched it first thing this morning, I looked up as the credits were playing. Like, is there an end credit scene? And someone, some jackass, I don't remember who it was, wrote an article that was like 12 paragraphs. And it was like, but I guess you're wondering, like, after having read, you know, 1,000 words, is there one? And then it was just like, no. I was like, you son of a bitch.
Like the recipes that tell about their summer in Nantucket.
Okay. I want to just say, give you a little history lesson, that when Disney bought Star Wars, and when they started talking about we're developing these projects, the Kenobi film was one of the first projects that was announced. We're developing it. No timeline, no, but like this is in the works. And then Rogue One has gotten a warmer reception now, you know, a few years on. But at the time it was like, and then Solo, and then Disney was like, we're not spending a whole lot more money on these one-off movies because you guys are jerks.
Yeah. Rightfully so. In some cases, rightfully so, because I actually enjoyed Solo. I watched it like 2 years after it came out. I was not like, I didn't watch it when it came out.
Yeah.
I heard all the bad press and I was like, I'll get to it eventually.
Sure.
And then when I went back and watched it after having such low expectations, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Likewise. So the good news, bad news of that is, bad news, we had to wait an extra 7 years or whatever to get this show. But it was a show. We got to have, you know, hours of content that we wouldn't have gotten if it was a film. And I've watched Star Wars now for 25 years. And Obi-Wan Kenobi has always been my favorite character. And so you have to understand how excited I was when there was a movie potentially, but especially when there was a show. To have this finally coming, you know, 7-year-old Daniel was what would have loved to have seen the Obi-Wan Kenobi show and really lap all that up. So
even when it was just Alec Guinness, that was still your...
I loved, then. And of course, you know, I watched the original trilogy on VHS, but I saw it in the theaters when they did the re-release in 97 and 98. And then the prequels came out the next year, and I was the right age to really get into those and enjoy them and understand them. And of course, that means that Ewan McGregor is as much Obi-Wan Kenobi to me, and I think to a lot of people, as Alec Guinness. In fact, now especially, but even before, time-wise, he's played Obi-Wan Kenobi more than Alec Guinness has.
Well, even on screen.
Right.
Yeah, but the other part of that for me, and that's a good point that you bring up because I'm a little older than you.
Yeah.
Not saying it in a judgmental way, like when I went to see the prequels, I found Ewan McGregor to be such a joy to watch.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I was supremely disappointed, as, you know, at the time, a lot of people were with the prequels. So I found myself overall having a negative impression of the prequels initially because I didn't like the first one, Phantom Menace. I was not a fan of, even though now the pod racing, it's I enjoy it more than I used to.
Yeah.
But because of that, everything after that became kind of like, well, how bad is this one going to be? I guess it wasn't quite as bad, you know, whatever. But
he was always the bright spot.
Yes, he was.
Even when people were really critical of the prequels.
Yeah.
And they were like, but at least Ewan McGregor's great. At least that thing is great.
There's things you might randomly like about the prequels, whatever it might be, maybe the hamminess of the Emperor and, you know, Palpatine and stuff. But I think objectively speaking, Ewan McGregor is, the best part of those movies.
Well, and so that's why I say, like, for this series, I was very excited because this was the first time where I was, like, past all that prequels weirdness. I got over it. I've rewatched them many times since and come to appreciate them for various things that maybe I didn't appreciate the same way I appreciated the original trilogy.
Right.
But this one, it was like, okay, I know they're not going to make some of those same mistakes, but I'm still going to get to see Ewan McGregor playing Obi-Wan.
Right.
And so that had me really excited to watch this series. And then that's about the only thought I had going into it was, I can't wait to see Ewan McGregor, one of my favorite actors, playing this iconic role.
Right.
And gave literally no thought to, well, what planet will he be on? What will he be doing in this
movie?
And so I enjoyed, even though a lot of that may seem obvious to a lot of other people, for me, I just came into it going, all right, so I'm guessing we're going to have him doing something around, you know, hiding out from Darth Vader and all that, but I didn't know where it would go from there.
Yeah, other than knowing Darth Vader would be there, I didn't know where the story was going to take us at all either.
Well, and that was a big part of the marketing for the series, too, was rematch. We're going to get to see Obi-Wan and Darth Vader. This is the second bout, so to speak, you know, of their three matchups. And getting to see Hayden Christensen in some form or fashion, we didn't know what, in the role of Darth Vader, in the role of Anakin Skywalker again. Which, side note, I think it's been really heartwarming to see him finally getting the recognition that he really should have gotten back when the prequels were getting so much hate. And for fans my age who, like, listen...
You didn't hold it against him as much as maybe people...
No, I didn't understand. Of course, I was 12 and 13 and 14 years old. I didn't know these movies were getting critically panned. I just knew they were awesome. And then when I got older, I was like, wait, you mean people didn't like these? Why?
And
of course, as I've gotten older, I've started to understand...
But he didn't write the scripts, you know?
No,
like that's
my major problem with all those was the scripts.
Right.
They were sometimes the dialogue was just really hard to take.
But I'll say, as a person who bleeds Star Wars, if you go back and watch the original trilogy, those scripts are kind of, they can be stinkers sometimes too.
Yes, anyway. You're exactly right. And it's because we had such, I watched those when I was much younger.
Exactly.
So I have a different feeling for those, just like most people do.
But yeah, if you look at it through an objective lens, Star Wars has never been high theater. It's always been, it's been pulpy. It's been a space opera.
Yes.
And so anyway, expectations were high. Excitement was very high, especially in the Barnett household for Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I mean, let's go ahead and get into it. Tell me your pros. Tell me your minuses. What are your sort of memorable moments? What do you think?
I enjoyed the adventure part of it. So they were going from different place to different place, and he was trying to rescue Leia, and they were here, and then they were there,
right.
And then obviously meeting up with Darth Vader and having a few bouts with him. And I like that they were a little more understated. The prequels go a little too far into the lightsaber battles with Yoda flying around and doing backflips and stuff.
It's a logical progression from where you see them in Revenge of the Sith versus how they fight in A New Hope.
Yes.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that robotic, but it was still like a little, it made more sense there. I was wondering if they were going to do this when he was trapped under the rock. Spoiler alert, I guess.
All spoilers all the time.
When Darth Vader throws all the rocks on him, and he's trapped under the rocks there, and he uses the Force to get out of it. I was like, are they going to have that, like, expel a bunch of energy and then his hair is going to go all white and they're finally going to explain, like, that gap
right.
on how Ewan McGregor in, what, 8 more years, hey, whatever.
I will say, as someone whose facial hair has recently started to go, like, it can happen quicker than you think. I'll just say that.
And there's two suns on Tatooine. That cannot be easy on you.
It cannot be. I will add that one of my favorite parts to all this, just as far as a broad favorite thing that I had, was watching Princess Leia as the precocious young leader to be, but seeing some of those notes as a kid, I will say, and again, I throw this out there whenever you guys have me on, I always bring up, like, I'm a dad, I have kids, I have girls. I have three girls who I'm sure at least one, if not all three of them, will want to dress in one of the outfits that she was wearing when they watched this. We have not all watched it together yet. I just watched it quickly to do this.
Right.
I got notes of, like, all my girls, I saw moments in each of their lives where I was like, that is exactly like what I deal with my little girls. And so from the, like, having a million questions to, well, I don't think I want to do that. And I don't think that's right. And to,
or
even
seeing,
like,
through, you know, situations in a way that only kids can.
Only kids can see. Yes. And calling you on your BS when you're like, look, we're trying to get out of the mall right now. I don't know if Annie Ann's is open or not. Let's just get out of here. And then, like, and she's like, but why do they, you're hiding something. And it's like, oh, yes, it is open, but we got to go. Like, all of that rang very true. And I don't know the actress's name.
Vivian Lyra Blair newcomer to the scene.
I thought, I don't know. Again, it would be very weird, I guess, if I kind of were like, that kid actor sucked. But
sometimes
it's not like people haven't yelled at the kid actors.
In Star Wars before.
I thought
she was exceptional.
I thought she did a great job. And I thought that a lot of those moments of him wanting to do the right thing by her, but just being really stressed out by the process of doing that rang very true on many human notes. And chasing a kid around and you're trying to escape. And then it's like, oh wait, now she's over here, but we got to go here. And you're making too much noise and your droid is going off. And, like, you know, all this stuff. It was very much something that I thought they hit a lot of that very well.
I also thought they did a pretty good job of making that authentic to who Leia as an adult is. And it feels that makes sense that Leia was like this because she's like this as an adult. Or you see little nuggets of that personality that, you know, maybe form a little bit differently. But yeah, I thought they did a nice job with that.
It's worth remembering, too. So these Luke and Leia are supposed to be 10 years old. They're 19 in Star Wars. Like, it's not really all that, like, Leia is clearly the early bloomer of the two.
Why did one get to go live in super cool town and become a princess and the other one was a moisture farmer on a two-sunned planet?
You know, I think it was just they had to separate them and they had to put them with people who could keep a secret. And there weren't too many people who knew. Because
they could trust.
Even before Anakin Skywalker was Darth Vader, it was a secret that Padme was pregnant.
Yeah.
Like, only a very few people knew that. And Bail Organa was one of the people who knew who the father was.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was this sort of trusted advisor.
And they couldn't keep the kids together, so they did have to make that tough choice. It just really seems unfair to Luke.
It is interesting. They did, like, a Star Wars what if where Leia went to Tatooine and Luke went to
Alderaan.
Oh, and it's very funny to see how different Luke is kind of a whiny baby in A New Hope at first. And
he's
to
still
see,
playing with that
to see
freaking
him
toy.
Being the young prince. I just want to say on that point that Leia was a well-kept secret. See, no one knew going in that she was going to be there. They had announced that there was a young Luke Skywalker cast.
Oh, okay.
And so we knew Luke. And of course, Luke had to be in it because Obi-Wan is on Tatooine.
Yeah.
I did, for your benefit, Chops, think it was really funny that Luke, who you're always like, I don't need more Luke Skywalker. He barely got any screen time.
Yes, they did actually.
That was probably a good thing, yeah.
It is, if you don't like seeing Skywalkers, though, in general, you do not. I mean, I don't think you came into Kenobi saying, well, they're better not. It's like,
Kenobi's a story where it's okay that it comes back to Skywalker.
I did sort of chuckle thinking, like, Luke has, I think, one line. I'm not scared.
I think you're right.
And we've seen so much of Luke that it is nice that Leia gets her due.
Yeah.
And it also, and we'll talk a little bit about people's perceived plot holes later
I was wondering why young Luke wasn't a digitally de-aged, superimposed Mark Hamill face.
We'll also talk about that.
Well, they go the other way, right? Where they de-aged the older. Yeah, exactly.
They'll de-age him down to in his 20s, but not right. in his.
but T-Bone, to your point, I agree wholeheartedly. I thought that was a delight. And something that in the first episode, I was like, oh, I don't know about this.
Yeah, right.
I don't know how this is going to go.
Yeah, I didn't know either, and I was cautiously optimistic that it would go well, and I would enjoy it. But again, I will admit, I am someone who tends to enjoy Star Wars things more than
the average bear.
Yeah, than the average Star Wars fan who will be a little more critical. So I may not be on the... But I think that one, even the more critical Star Wars fans...
I think surprisingly, I haven't seen criticism of it.
Yeah. I think being critical and cynical, you might say, like, the little chase scene where young Leia gets kidnapped. But it makes sense that that's really quaint and, like, tiny, because they're chasing after a child in the forest, and they're not trying to kill her. Yeah. And then flees there.
Yeah.
And that's a great point. That is literally running after my two-year-old.
You turn into a bumbling
Here's
idiot.
The thing. Yes.
You turn into a clumsy.
Because they can duck into anything. And
it's not just that. Like, running in an open field. She's run away from me. Like, just we play, kids play soccer, and we'll be at the soccer fields. And she runs away. And because I'm afraid of, like, well, I don't want to trip and fall and hurt this kid, I'm just trying to pick her up. But you do find yourself being
you don't,
I'm right there. And yet, how did I not get her? Like, it may not be that the reason they did that, but I can say that that actually rings true, at least in my fat ass experience. I have a tough time staying with my kids. So maybe that is real. But we haven't talked about one of the probably best things, at least I thought about this whole series, which was the amount of just sheer lightsaber hand to hand combat that we got. As a kid who grew up watching this stuff.
I have a question for you.
I can't. Yeah. I don't get enough of it, is what I'm saying. So you give me as much of it as you want. I'm here for it.
Because you've got Vader with a saber.
Yeah.
You've got Obi-Wan. And do any of the other Jedis ever actually use their lightsaber? Mm-mm. There are other Jedis in there.
Show
but,
up, yeah,
but they don't use their lightsaber.
I mean, the Inquisitors do.
Yeah, and
that was my question. I thought there were only two Siths at a time. So are these defected Jedis that are working for the Empire, but they're still Jedi?
Let's fill in some lore.
Okay.
The Inquisitors are a group of former Jedi of different various ages of development or whatever, who basically, when Order 66 happened, a few were given the option to join up or die. And a lot of them were actually temple guards. So the Grand Inquisitor was a temple guard. And basically Anakin comes in and says to him, you have the choice to join me or get slaughtered. In the Grand Inquisitor's case, and of course they're Sith, they're dark side users, so it's always petty bullshit, right? He hadn't been allowed full access to the Jedi archives, and so he had a grudge to settle against the Jedi. And so he was like, yeah, I'll kill them all.
Okay, interesting.
But to your point, Sith are always two, the master and the apprentice. But there's always this thing where the way that the apprentice becomes a master thereby is by killing their master. And the Sith, basically, it's like if you're not powerful enough to fend off your apprentice's attacks, or if they think they can take you and they successfully do it, like, you don't deserve to be the one Lord of the Sith. Right?
Right.
And so the Inquisitors, in some sense, are kind of like understudies for Vader. So if Vader ever overthrew Palpatine, theoretically, whoever's the Grand Inquisitor would become his apprentice. They never frame it that formally, though in the comics they kind of do get into that amount of detail where he basically is like, you're trying out for if Palpatine ever bites it, or if Vader bites it, trying out to be the next apprentice.
But no one's ever really gone.
That's correct.
That's what they say.
That's what they say.
So talking about the Inquisitors, and the Reva is
the third sister.
Yeah, she's the third sister, and she's like the main one we're following as sort of like the main antagonist or
Darth Vader. The first half of the show, at least.
Just to be clear, there are
nine.
Well, okay, but in the ones that we see, we end up seeing, four of them?
Correct. The Grand Inquisitor, the third sister, the fifth brother, and I think the second sister?
Oh, okay.
They don't, or fourth sister. They don't give her as much screen time. They don't really say as much
about
her.
She kind of, called in an airstrike or something at one point.
Basically.
I feel like that's basically, or something. Like,
and
she
she's
had
in the comics
one quick thing.
And has some stuff in the comics.
Yeah.
But, they didn't give her a ton of airtime.
Yeah.
So okay. with Reva and Moses Ingram, I felt like I was on a bit of a roller coaster with my opinion of the role, because I watched the first two episodes like the first day they came out, and I like Moses Ingram. I think yeah. she did a really good job in The Queen's Gambit. I think she's really good in that. I don't know if she pulls off the like badass stuff very well, and I was thinking that, and I looked at Jen, and we both kind of had that opinion, and then 2 days later, there's a bunch of people who make it like you feel really bad if you're like critiquing the performance, but it's not that. I'm not one of the racist people sending hate messages to her. But then the series goes on and you're like, maybe she's not pulling this off as a performance part because she's kind of being a double agent. So,
yeah.
And then, I don't know how to evaluate the performance.
I wanted to ask you, do you feel any different? Because I was with you. However, I will say from moment one, I knew of the five younglings that escaped, I was like, that's going to be the third sister.
Yeah.
So I had it in my head right away, whatever her story. And I, of course, I knew that Inquisitors are almost always fallen Jedi. I can't say with 100, like, oh yeah, 100% of them were at the Jedi Temple. I can't say that for sure, but I know well enough of the ones we see like any amount of, they're all former Jedi. And so I said, that's going to be Moses Ingram or Reva. And that's going to be a huge part of her motivation. Mm. Either that she blames Obi-Wan Kenobi and like has this vendetta, or that she's not really full-throatedly in this as,
Once I learned that fact, now I'm questioning, I'm like, so was it actually a really good performance because you feel like there's a facade to right. her badassery and her angriness of being an Inquisitor, and then it goes on, and then, you know, she gets the chance to do it, but she's still kind of doing it for the wrong reasons when she's chasing after Luke.
Yeah.
And then her best scene probably of the season is that final scene where she's breaking down and crying, and Obi-Wan's explaining that it's good that you didn't give in to your dark impulses.
I would argue I don't disagree with that. I would argue just as good as the scene where they're negotiating through the doors.
Oh,
and
yes.
Obi-Wan's like,
yeah.
ah, you're hunting.
But that's
him.
Also similar where she's letting down that
right.
the facade she
and
has.
I agree. I do think she's better when she is, let's say, honest.
Yeah.
Well, I think it wouldn't ring true. Again, me giving professional actors advice on how to do their jobs. But I think it wouldn't ring as true if she was like so full-throatedly badass that
yeah.
you're like, how is this same person inhabiting this other reality?
Yeah.
How could that be if she's also this person who's really unsure of what she is? She had basically no childhood. She's from early in her time as being this Force-sensitive kid. She's dealt with nothing but trauma. It would not make sense if she was just like a full-throated 100% yeah. badass right out of the gates.
And keep in mind, she's supposed to be an 18 or a 19-year-old.
So she might, yeah, maybe that's also just the way.
And also
yeah.
think about how Anakin Skywalker was. He put on this air of being more of a badass than he was when he was that age because yeah. he didn't have a reputation. He was yeah. this sort of.
Kylo does it too.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think it's this thing with Force users where, like, especially dark side Force users, where they think they have something to prove, and usually they do because that's how the Sith set it up. You always are trying to prove yourself. And so I agree with you that at first I was like, I'm not sure about her in this role, but I think she really grew into it over the course of yeah. the show. And yeah, in retrospect, when you know that maybe there's a part of her that's holding back.
So I sometimes when you know the twist to something and you go back and watch it again,
oh, yeah,
it's like, oh, this scene makes a lot more
yeah.
sense now. I'm thinking of like The Sixth Sense and stuff like that. When you know a twist like that, you're like, okay, now I get the actual character and why they're acting that way, and then two, maybe why the actor chose to do it this way, because she knew that was going to be her character's motivation
yeah.
as she was going through the series.
By the way, if you need a really good example of that from a totally not Star Wars source,
yeah.
go watch Arrested Development Season 2, Charlize Theron's character, where the entire season when you're watching it, you're going, what is she even doing in this
yeah.
role? What is happening? And then you get to the end of the series or the season, you go,
right.
Oh my gosh.
And of course, it's Arrested Development, so they show you all the
moments.
They
show
you
all the moments you should have known, and you're like, I can't. How did I miss all that? Anyway, yes, that's a thing.
One more thing for me with the Inquisitors, because
yeah.
two Inquisitors, both two that were called Grand Inquisitors in this
sure.
series, seemingly die by a lightsaber strike. And actually, one, it's weird. The thing that makes the lightsaber a great weapon is also what makes it not a great weapon,
that
because it immediately cauterizes the wound, so nobody ever bleeds out. So you have to like repeatedly like hit them or like off, chop basically. Them off.
Chop them. Yeah, you have to cut them in half.
So there's a really interesting, and I didn't come up with this. There's a great Star Wars YouTube channel called Star Wars Explained, who had a video is like, how come Qui-Gon got stabbed in the stomach and died and the Inquisitors didn't? First of all, because the narrative needed that. And that's usually yeah, that should be a good enough answer. But there is this thing with, well, first of all, Powans, which is the species that the Grand Inquisitor is, have two stomachs. So getting stabbed in one of them isn't necessarily a death sentence. Fun little note.
Okay.
Something everybody should know.
Something everyone should know. Light side force users don't fear death because they believe that when you leave this physical form, you join the cosmic force, right? Mm, right. So they don't have any reason to fear that because that's kind of, I mean, it's kind of like going to heaven or reaching nirvana is much more
sure.
what it's like.
Yeah.
Going to elf heaven.
Yeah. Going to Valinor. Dark side force users don't have that. Their spirits don't get caught up in some great, they're sort of, they go to the version of Star Wars hell, essentially. And the Grand Inquisitor says himself, like, oh, revenge is a great motivator. But really, it's that they're afraid of death, and that's fear and anger are what motivate Sith, right? So being afraid of your own death is a great way to tap into the dark side of the Force.
And they've done a great job of showing that Sith really, really don't like to die. I mean, yeah. the way they brought back Darth Maul in the animated stuff, and as I said, no one's ever really yeah. gone with Palpatine. Oh, he's still alive somehow.
Well, and look at Palpatine's a prime example, right? Partially because of his hubris that he just wants to be the guy ruling the galaxy forever, but also because, yeah, there is that fear that if you're the most powerful dark side user, you're the least likely to be caught up in the cosmic force.
Palpatine's got it right, though.
My favorite moment of the entire thing is the final moment of the series. Obi-Wan looks down at Luke yeah. and says, hello there.
He said the thing.
Lost it. There's also it in that moment. That was my favorite part of the whole thing. Had to be said.
There's also the moment where he does the lightsaber stance with the two fingers out.
Yes.
And it's like, I did the thing.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Little fan service never hurts.
I just want to say that I thought Joel Edgerton and Bonnie Peace were surprising standout performances in this show. One, because they both clearly went back to the prequels and studied the vocal patterns of Phil Brown and Shelley Francis, I think, are the actors.
I was going to be so mad if you got those wrong, so I'm glad you got them right.
The woman who played Beru, her name is actually spelled Shelley, like Shillelagh, and so I actually don't know if it's Shelley or Shelley, but anyway. Point being, Joel Edgerton and Bonnie Peace, I think, were awesome in those roles, and I'm glad they got to have screen time. I'm glad they got to show. You know, Owen always comes across as such a dick in A New Hope, but you get to see that it's because he cares about Luke. He knows that Luke leaving his sheltered little place makes it 1,000 times more likely he's going to die.
Oh, sure.
And he thinks of Luke as his son.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it gave a lot more. I mean, not that we didn't already know this stuff when you've seen the original
sure.
trilogy, but it did give a lot more color to why it's not like any other. The country bumpkin
yeah.
things, the similarities
and
of
that's
like,
true
don't
too.
Leave your hometown. Yeah. You don't leave us all here. Why do you want to go off to the big school?
And it's like, that's true. And again, that's true too.
Some of that is true, but,
yeah.
but it's like when you realize the depth of that, it's a lot more than just how am I going to do all this farming without
right.
you, Luke? It's not just that.
It's this kid's going to go off and die because he's just like his father.
I think yeah. that was a yeah. cool opportunity for the actors playing him in this, and they reprised their role from
yeah.
episode 3 that. Because Owen and Beru aren't the most iconic characters in Star Wars, but they're around.
Yeah.
They really did have a tremendous opportunity to encapsulate them and really, this is different from how you imagine them in those first, the original
yeah.
trilogy. But it's like those ones, that really feels like it's the same people throughout.
Yes.
Like if you watched it all back to back, you'd be like, oh yeah, that's
yeah.
Owen and Beru.
You would feel the continuity. And like, and especially again, the vocal stuff. If you've now, I haven't gotten a chance to do it. I probably should have done that today is go watch A New Hope, right? I tell you, Joel Edgerton got the Owen vocalizations down. Pat, I don't think if you put them side by side, I don't think you'd know the difference. And
that's
I just thought that was really impressive.
Yeah.
And Beru,
I'll have
too.
To go back and listen.
And I've said this several times. Go read Star Wars from a certain point of view for A New Hope. In particular, The Empire Strikes Back one is also good. So from a certain point of view, those books are a series of short stories written by a bunch of different authors to commemorate the 40th anniversaries of these movies. So the Return of the Jedi is going to come out next year. But there is a short story about Beru shortly after she's killed, sort of joining as she's like joining the cosmic force and reflecting on what her role was in keeping Luke safe and what her role was in sort of keeping the homestead. And you realize Beru is this much more complex character than she's ever given the time for in A New Hope, right?
Yeah.
But there's a lot more going on under the hood, I guess.
Give Disney another 10 years and we'll have a whole Beru series that
I don't think they need a series. I think this was the right way to explore it, but...
I'm saying that's the kind of thing that Disney has going for when it's like, well, what else could we do?
Yeah, if we are
so many characters like that have just enough to do on screen that everybody goes, oh, I really like them. Well, down the road, I'm not saying they're going to do a Beru series, but you know what I mean?
It would be...
People would want to see more of some of these characters.
It would actually be kind of cool for them to make an anthology series of some of the best of those short stories. And I think hers would be one. There's a really great one with Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon communing, like... In the way that you see them kind of start to do at the end of the show. There's one like R5-D2, the red astromech droid, is apparently slightly force sensitive.
Okay.
And he like knew that R2-D2 needed to be the one to go on to be sold. And so he like intentionally blew his motivator. Anyway.
Oh, while we're on droids, two things from this little conversation. While we're on droids, I really like that Leia's character like cared for droids like they were people. I thought that was a cool detail. And the other thing, if we're talking about what's next, I got the sense that they're at least laying the groundwork that O'Shea Jackson's character could be in something.
Because
because Obi-Wan goes, there's not a lot of, it's something like this, like there's not a lot of leaders left, keep going.
And I'm just getting started.
I
do think they're setting themselves up, and I actually think that would be a pretty cool show. And also, we've talked about Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, and I think we've talked about the fact that there's a sequel. It's a video game, and there's a character in that named Cal Kestis, who's played by Cameron Monaghan, and the character in the video game looks like Cameron Monaghan. And of course, now there's rumor that they're going to give him a show. I think that's the show. I think the show is him joining forces with some of these people involved in the path and how they help rescue these younglings. And of course, they set up Quinlan Vos, who is a fan favorite character from... He like makes this cameo appearance in Phantom Menace as an extra, but then they liked his look so much that they turned him into a full character for the Clone Wars. And I think we could actually see him on screen in something like that.
With the path, I did, for me, this was kind of funny. Like when they were escaping the, what is it? Fortress Inquisitus.
Inquisitorius.
Yeah. Which that looks great. That's one of the ones.
That's a location from Jedi Fallen
Order. Okay. They spent a lot of money on that shot. That looks really good. But when they're finally escaping, it's Reva who throws that like bomb at the ship that like gave them enough cover for them to escape. And like that goes down, and I was like, oh no, not that guy. Like that was a few too many characters introduced in subsequent fashion for me to really care about that guy dying.
I think it's more the look on his face when he's like, oh, I didn't even think I might get killed.
Well,
I think that's what gives it
from the other pilot too, of like, I didn't think we weren't going to come back. I can't believe I'm back.
I just thought this was a standard. I mean, we're flying like those speeders are basically tugboats. Essentially, that's the role they play. That's why they have the grappling hooks.
Oh, sure.
And so it's like, I'm just driving I'm driving a Ford Pinto. Into a war zone. I wouldn't come back.
When you frame it that way, I mean, it's cool that the idea that like the people who are like kind of the beginning of
the rebellion
that it's like, this is going to be a real thing. Right. This isn't just like a hobby that we're going to like on weekends go fight the Empire.
So. While we're talking about Jedi Fallen Order, the Fortress Inquisitorius is a location from that video game. And actually, there's a couple of moments in this show that if you've only watched the movies, and even if you've only watched the live action shows, they definitely borrow from a video game and from an animated show and put in here. And for those who are like real super fans, which is to say, know the literature, so to speak, it's a little cheap. You forgive it because it's cool, but like...
Is that the Jedi frozen in amber thing?
That's actually three things then. Yeah, that's a thing that's from Rebels. And then basically the third sister is very much like a character that's the second sister in Jedi Fallen Order who in the end turns against Vader and tries to like kill him to give Cal Kestis time to escape and then gets like, so has the turn right at the end, where he's like, no, actually, Vader, I'm going to kill you. And then just gets obliterated. And the moment where Obi-Wan cuts part of Vader's helmet away, and you see his face underneath, and you like half hear his voice and half hear Vader's voice. That scene is identical to a scene in Rebels where Ahsoka has that moment where she's fighting Vader, and she's like started to realize that Vader is Anakin, and has that moment where she cuts part of his helmet away. And it's a very similar thing. Like, no, Anakin's gone. I'm Vader now. And then they fight.
Yeah. And of course, neither of them finish the job. Yeah.
So in that way, like, those moments were almost verbatim lifted, and it's cool to see them in live action. It's a little like, okay, I guess we've done this before, but I guess Star Wars is, you know, George Lucas is famous for saying Star Wars is like poetry. It rhymes. And so
reminded me of like a band that like put an album out and it was an indie, you know, release. Right. And then they get signed to a major label and they're like, oh, hey, let's do those songs again, but now with a better producer. Like, you know, like let's put, I mean, not that the other ones suck, but you know what I mean? Let's put this out in a much more maybe wide audience way that more people are even going to enjoy and see this than who saw it previously.
Yeah. So. Shout out to Walk the Moon, who Jenny's got a body like an hourglass. The original was better, Nick Patrica.
there you go.
On that scene, I think they did a really good job of managing, because I think Better Call Saul does a really good job with this as well, that there's characters that, you know, like, this character isn't around or this character is around, but still managing to somehow make it suspenseful.
Yeah.
Even though I know neither of them die. In this, like, I thought the same thing.
You just have to know it. I'm very invested in Leia getting away from baddies and Obi-Wan saving her and all these things, where the whole time I'm watching it going like, you know they're going to make it out, but I'm still curious as to how and why. And if that's going to be the big thing I kept battling in this was, is this going to be plausible?
Sure.
That was my big kind of unforeseen drama. Is this going to be earned?
I read an article from some troll that with a straight face after episode 5 came out said, so Star Wars is going to kill off Luke Skywalker now? Here's 4 possible explanations.
Oh, good Lord.
And like, I thought, oh, this has got to be a satirical article. I clicked it thinking, surely they're making fun of the people who are... No, straight faced. We're like, so clearly they're killing Luke in the next episode. Here's how are they going to justify that, Disney?
Good night.
Anyway,
maybe some people need to just go outside.
Every time we talk about Star Wars, I say this thing, and I'm going to keep saying it every time we talk about Star Wars. Get off my case. I want as many opportunities as possible to see Darth Vader's getting the reputation that he's earned to be the scariest motherfucker in the galaxy.
Yeah, I was thinking about that while watching this.
And if you can't take this as exhibit A in the trial of why Darth Vader is the BAMF of the galaxy.
Darth Vader really has no business using a lightsaber. It looks cool, but he's so powerful. But like, why are you doing hand-to-hand combat with a sword?
Like you said, why does he even use a lightsaber? He's just deflecting things. He's moving it around.
A ship from taking off.
Tore the side out. You know, he caused a localized earthquake and made a sinkhole and then just threw half of mountains down on top. Yes.
When he just is playing with Reva, like waits for her to come up and then gives her back the other one. And like,
it's great. The Darth Vader that we get in the original trilogy is a little bit more, has learned some lessons, right? But this Darth Vader has no one stood in his way for 10 years. Obi-Wan apparently is the only person who can match him in a fight. And so, he's just toying with her. He just takes the lightsaber off of her, breaks it in half, tosses her half and says, okay. And then, like you said, for the other half of the battle, he's just like using the force to deflect the beams to move himself around. And Darth Vader is not, he's a big guy. He doesn't have like dexterity. He's not doing backflips and things. Yeah. So it's literally just him intuiting when a blade's going to be in a place and making sure he's not there. I've always thought that
like, even going back to the originals, that's always been one of the more enjoyable things of watching Darth Vader in fight scenes, is that he's got this lumbering quality that makes you think that partly is because of when they originally made these, you had a giant lumbering human inside of all that, and they couldn't CGI that.
Right.
But it does give him this quality of, well, why is everyone so scared of him? It must be because he is so powerful in other ways that aren't imminently visible, like, you know, hulking strength or immense quickness or something.
And so, that he can just ragdoll stuff with the force. Yeah.
And so then seeing him in this one, having still that very slow, methodical movement, but then occasionally putting a lightsaber where it needs to be and then throwing a mountain on top of Obi-Wan. And you get a good sense of like, yes, that's exactly, that rings true. And look at how powerful he was when he wasn't as restrained, because he was still kind of this, not teenager at that point, but he was certainly this, you know, young aggro male.
Right.
I'm so angry at the world and no one can tell me what to do.
And as Darth Vader had to relearn how to fight, because he couldn't the stuff that Anakin could do physically. Right. So he had to use this, develop these other tactics.
And he's kind of in a similar spot Kylo Ren was in at the end of the sequel trilogy, where he's solely focused on one other guy, you know, his mentor, actually. Yeah. Cause that's who, for Kylo Ren, it was Luke. And then for him, it's Obi-Wan. The funny thing is, Kylo Ren was wrong. Darth Vader was right. If he had taken care of Obi-Wan, things probably don't go down the way they do for the Empire.
Right, for sure. Well, I think that's, for the baddest MF-er in the galaxy to be scared of you, that means something.
Right.
And a little thing, you know, Laura, when we watch the shows together, she always has very insightful questions. And one of them was like, why did Anakin have this reputation of being, even before he was Darth Vader, like, why did he have this reputation of being this, like, war hero, badass, could do everything? Like, why didn't people think that about Obi-Wan Kenobi? And I was like, well, actually, people in the know did think that about Obi-Wan Kenobi. He was considered to be as talented a swordsman, as talented, a more talented general, a more talented negotiator. He got the nickname during the Clone Wars of the Great Negotiator. It's just, there's that scene in Revenge of the Sith where they come back from saving the Chancellor. And he says, Anakin, I'll let you handle the politicians. You have your day in the sunlight. You be the poster boy. I'm going to just hang over here.
Right.
But really, amongst the Jedi in the know, Obi-Wan Kenobi was much more well-respected. It's why he was a member of the Jedi High Council in Revenge of the Sith, and Anakin wasn't.
Right.
What is it? We grant you title of Jedi Master, but we don't recognize you as part of the council, something like that. Yeah.
I think if you're Darth Vader and you're scared of a person, like, that should tell you something.
Yeah, I thought it did a lot of, it was, to me, very enjoyable to kind of see, I would even say Obi-Wan still in his prime.
Yeah.
Because now he is still this, he's got the added wisdom of the fight may not need to happen. You saw multiple times where it was like, there's another way. I don't have to go fight him necessarily.
Yeah, I don't need a lightsaber, not all.
Right,
yeah.
And doing those things is something where you still see the delineation between him as a very powerful Jedi and the powerful Sith, and yet he has the restraint. And I think that is probably that probably gets to one of my little problems. The only real problem I had with this was there are multiple times where you think, why don't you finish him off?
In both directions.
In both directions. Yeah. And I'm guessing the answer that the Star Wars lore would say is, this is the restraint that these both, like, that Obi-Wan has and that Darth Vader Anakin is kind of learning, is, I've done enough. I'm not worried about this because I know he knows now who has won. Like,
and there's also, I think, a little bit of Obi-Wan who knows that Darth Vader's the one who says there's no Anakin. And Obi-Wan's that's not true.
Well, and I think Darth Vader thinks he's digging at Obi-Wan by like taking something away from him. He thinks Obi-Wan is proud of the notion that he killed his best friend, right? Mm. Anakin thinks the reason he wants to kill Obi-Wan is because he wants to it's revenge.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks by saying, like, you didn't kill Anakin Skywalker, I did, that's somehow a dig to Obi-Wan's ego, when in fact, it's the thing that lets him release his guilt.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because when you talk, it's Revenge of the Sith, it's Return of the Jedi.
Right. And I think in that moment, Obi-Wan realizes, like, the person that I tried to kill on Mustafar was not Anakin Skywalker anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, then the guilt's taken away. And there's that line in Return of the Jedi where Darth Vader says, Obi-Wan once thought, as you did, that I could be redeemed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably after Anakin reflects on this fight and realizes Obi-Wan walked away, I don't think Anakin's dumb. I think probably he thought about it for 12 more years and realized, like, you know, Obi-Wan could have killed me then. If what he really wanted to do was kill me, he could have done it then. But he didn't. And shoot. And then, right. Of course, that also means Obi-Wan Kenobi's the better man.
Yes, yeah.
And well, he's the more powerful warrior.
Has to ring true that, like, if Obi-Wan does kill him, then it's like, then he's not this Jedi. Like, it betrays kind of everything that he is, because he's never, all the Jedi are not about, let's go.
It's not about taking a life, it's about defending a life.
Yes.
He says that in that fight scene.
Yes.
Which, by the way, that flashback fight scene is awesome. And I'm also glad they didn't go heavier on the CGI. I've seen some people complain like, oh, you could de-age, blah, blah, blah. Why didn't it? It's like, because what? We get it.
We know
they're older actors. Like, shut up about it. You get mad when they do too much CGI. You get mad when they don't do enough CGI.
That's
shut
the most 40-year-old looking 20-year-old in the world. But who cares?
Well, right. I also like how they kept going back to that fight scene as opposed to just doing a minute and a half scene and then being like, this is what's going to happen
parallels.
In this episode.
Right.
They interspersed
parallels.
It throughout the episode, which is what
really charming moment in that fight. Charming, smart, a really well-written moment of that fight is where Anakin has Obi-Wan pinned down and he goes with one hand with the lightsaber and just starts beating it like it's a bat, which is exactly the same move Vader uses against Luke when they fight.
Right.
And he cuts his hand off. It's bang, 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 cut.
Yeah,
right. And then Luke later uses against him in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah,
that's right.
And it's very smart writing. And also, Vader almost always wields a lightsaber with one hand. There are moments in the Obi-Wan fight where it's getting kind of dire, where he goes to two hands and you're like, oh, he's serious.
Yes.
Like he's, you know what I mean? This is, I don't know. It's just smart choreography to show there's this thing that Vader has that he's deviating from. There's got to be a reason.
There's two Vader Obi-Wan fights and they go very differently in another way they rhyme, but they go the opposite direction. The thing I liked was the implication that obviously you get it, Luke, when A New Hope, he has to start training and learn what the Force is and figure all that out. But I like the idea that for Obi-Wan, if you don't use it, you lose it, kind of, with the Force. And he has to, so through the course of that week or, couple of days, re-energizes his Force muscle and works it back out. And so when they fight again, Darth Vader even says something like, oh, you're like back up to full strength.
Yeah. Your strength is returned.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's this, because you see the sort of old grizzled Luke Skywalker who says he has cut himself off from the Force. Because it was dangerous to let himself be connected to it, one, because you can feel people in the Force and you can track them in the Force, right?
Mm-hmm.
But two, because he was so, I think you're right about if you don't use it, you lose it. But I think the flip side of that is Obi-Wan had cut himself off from the Force and he turned the tap back on. And so I do think there is him finding his legs and relearning it to an extent. But I also think it's symbolic that he had just completely cut himself off. Otherwise, he would have known Anakin was alive. Because he would have sensed him in the Force. If he and it's made clear to us, it's a surprise to him that to hear the name Darth Vader.
Yes.
It's a surprise to him to know that Anakin is alive.
Well, and what's interesting, I thought through all that too, especially that fight scene where, his helmet gets cut open.
Yeah.
That's the scene where he says, "You didn't kill Anakin,
I did.
Obviously, in the very first movie, the episode 4, you have the iconic scene where Obi-Wan says, "He betrayed and murdered your father." And so many people have had so many problems with that of like,
Obi-Wan just straight up lied.
They lied. That's BS.
Or loophole or plot hole or whatever.
Yeah. Like, and they use this moment to really kind of solidify, like, there's a time where he didn't believe that.
Right.
And now he has a clear moment where he says, "That's what happened. And I can't
you are no
go
longer
the rest
my
of the
friend,
way.
Right.
Yeah, like I cannot go through life saying this is Anakin Skywalker in a suit. That is Darth Vader, and he killed my Padawan, he killed my friend, he killed
plus if
guy
you're
that I had
to,
hope for.
Yeah.
You're trying to motivate.
I think that's a really smart point, T-Bone.
I think there's also just the idea, if you're trying to motivate like a young kid to like take this up and do it, and it's probably maybe not the best
idea.
Oh yeah, I killed your dad, or two.
Also, your dad's the worst guy in the universe.
Yeah, your dad's like a terrible dude, let's go kill him.
From a certain point of view, that's the famous line, right?
Yes,
like from a certain point of view, what I told you was true.
Yes.
I like the idea, too, that some people were like, well, Leia definitely knows Obi-Wan, but in her message to him, it's like, oh, you knew my father in the Clone Wars,
blah, blah, blah.
But I like I took the explanation that some people have thrown out there. Like, she's just doing it a little bit more covertly because she knows that Obi-Wan, if he gets the message, is going to remember her.
And he
straight up says,
like, if people know we know each other, that's bad for both of us.
Yes.
And so, yeah, exactly. So I don't have a problem with
She's following protocol. She's someone who understands.
And in the same way that Obi-Wan says, I don't remember over owning a droid. Of course he knows R2-D2.
Yes.
He's trying to protect people involved. Because if he says, oh yeah, R2-D2, he was your dad's droid to Luke Skywalker. Look at the can of worms that opens up.
Well, right. It all goes back to...
That's why they had to keep wiping C-3PO's memory, because he kept running his mouth and R2-D2 gets to keep his.
Right, right. I think that's... It's very interesting at the end of all of that to piece all this together to say Obi-Wan Kenobi has to walk a very... And I'm not sure that George Lucas necessarily planned it that way, but I don't care. At the end of closing this loop, what they've done with Kenobi in the series, yeah. I mean, is they've helped you along if you really had problems with some of these plot holes, like they did with Rogue One.
Yeah, Rogue One
Why was there that hole in the first place? Why was there an opening port that would allow you to blow up a Death Star? Well, this is why. You know, like, you may not like their explanation, but they did at least go through a bit to give you a reasonable enough explanation for that.
And one of the criticism that I've seen online from people who want to sound really smart, and I really do feel like if this is your position, you don't get it.
Yeah, it's Star Wars, man. Have fun.
Yes. Does this series justify its existence? What the hell does that even mean?
Oh my gosh.
First of all, this is the project everyone's wanted. Obi-Wan Kenobi across the board is the one that the fans have wanted. I mean, it's been great that we've gotten these other things, don't get me wrong, but like, no one asked for Book of Boba Fett. People wanted Kenobi from the get-go.
Yeah.
And so
That alone justifies its existence. Star Wars fans kind of want to see this.
And yes, there was a tightrope it had to walk to make sure that it didn't violate these two sort of trilogies. Yeah, there were things they had to tiptoe around to make it make sense. But I don't think they made the series going, well, you know, there were these massive plot holes in A New Hope and we're Disney and we want to ruin it by over-explaining. No.
It's just they can do this story and in the process of that, they can throw you a few little, this makes sense a little bit better. At the end of the day, if we get to a point where Kenobi, there is a 7-part series where it's literally just him for one day of each full week, and all he's doing is brushing his teeth and combing his hair. You can say, does this justify its existence? And
yes.
I don't think we've crossed that threshold.
I would go bananas for that one. Because can I tell you actually what one of my gripes is?
What is that?
I have two gripes. One of my gripes is I would have loved to have seen a little bit more master and apprentice type scene with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. I really thought, when he was buried under all the rocks, that was when Qui-Gon was going to show up.
I thought when he landed on that planet, when he was in his ship and preparing the battle, that's when I thought he was going to get it. But at some point in that scene, it felt like that was the right time for him to say, Master, speak to me.
They set it up. We really all thought, like, this has to happen. Maybe it wouldn't have had to happen, except that you set it up in the show so much. I guess I kind of thought we would get 90 seconds of them having a training lesson of Qui-Gon being like, this is the first time you've reached out to me in the Force. Now that you've turned the tap back on, like, I don't dislike it. Liam Neeson is there. I love that. And I just think it was a little more casual.
Like you said, it was essentially like Liam Neeson being like, sup?
Yeah,
let's go.
And even that last line where he says, we've got a long way to go. I guess in a way, if I give me the pen, I want to write it to say we have a lot to talk about. I don't know.
Do we have any inkling, or has this already been shut down? Like, is there a chance there is another?
I don't think
little
so.
Mini series that would not. They've already done the Kenobi Darth Vader battle.
Yeah.
We don't need that done again.
I don't think. Ewan and Hayden have both said we'd come back and do it again. I hope they don't. I hope don't have a Kenobi season 2. I kind of hope they don't have a Kenobi season 2 at all. And that's coming from someone who was super excited for the show. I think you've told it now.
Yeah.
I think if you have Kenobi running around the galaxy doing all these adventures, I think that cheapens this sort of self-imposed
exile.
If they do
exile.
It, if they do it, I want them to totally lean in to the, in my opinion, most glorious, stupid scene of the series, where it essentially for 30 seconds turns into a sitcom. Okay. Like a soundstage sitcom, when he's sneaking Leia out under his coat. He's the most, everybody's looking for this guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't even, he's not really disguising himself that much.
All.
And he's got four legs under him. Two of them are tiny little children legs.
So if we see that, to kind of like, you, I think you were getting to the point, like, is there a chance we do see
that? For the Qui-Gon stuff.
I hope they make, from a certain point of view, and we get that little vignette. We get 10 minutes of them being master and apprentice in the Force or whatever.
Yeah. That's
I mean, the most I would want to see.
Right. That's what I'm saying is I don't know if there's any other way to do that unless, like you said, they told it some other, like a mini story, not an actual
It couldn't be a full length series. It doesn't need to be. That was one of my gripes. I just wish that was a little bit more. I wish we could have seen Qui-Gon being the master that Obi-Wan kept calling out for throughout the show in the moment that he needed him. I suppose in a way there's a book, Master and Apprentice, that talks about Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan's relationship and how they almost broke up, so to speak. Like Qui-Gon almost cast off Obi-Wan as his apprentice because they weren't getting along. But Qui-Gon turned down an opportunity to sit on the Jedi High Council in order to keep being Obi-Wan's master. It's a really great book.
Yeah.
But I think it would have been interesting to see a little bit more of the sort of the same flavor because they haven't seen each other in 12, 13 years. No, more than that. 20 years in canon.
Yeah.
It would make a little bit of sense for him to be like, you know, not just be like, sup.
Sub G.
Yeah, exactly. I still was glad he showed up.
They've got the Budweiser, like friends on the phone relationship all those years later, the Super Bowl commercial.
Yeah. I mean, that is kind of how some adult men have relationships with friends.
But he was
I haven't seen 20 years.
Yeah.
Yep. How you doing?
Again, I feel like it'd be like, we got a lot to, and maybe that's the point is that it's, but even when they were master and apprentice, it was a more rigid sort of relationship.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's very interesting, but you mentioned problems that you have or a small problem with this chops. Do you have any problems off the top of that you came to?
Like I said, with the budgetary constraints, I think that was obvious in certain points, but it didn't like bother me a ton. But there's especially, is it episode 3 where they're kind of running through the tunnels and stuff? That one is the one where you can tell like, oh, they're keeping things a little smaller here. And they spent all the money on this episode on him fighting with Vader.
Which I always think is funny because I never noticed that stuff, and you're always be like, well, you know, the back or the CGI was a little cheap in this scene. And I was just like, it was?
Yeah.
I
get
that.
I get what you're saying. I did not.
I mean, I believe you. I never noticed
it. But putting together, too, the like, they spend a lot of time in that tunnel because that tunnel is probably really easy to film.
That's
a good point.
I can think that way about certain properties. I don't think I can lose the magic with Star Wars.
Yeah.
I don't think I can sit back that critically. I can think of things like, oh, Darth Vader only wields his lightsaber with one hand. I can think about like, you know, Obi-Wan, boy, should he be able to lift all of those stones and throw them? But that was a power that Yoda learned in season 6 of the Clone Wars and might have had time to teach him. Like, that's, by the way, my only other gripe is like, did we really need him to lift every rock and throw them like baseballs?
Yeah, I know.
But to be fair, that's my criticism of that scene in Empire Strikes Back where Vader is throwing crates at Luke.
Yes.
And he's like badly swinging the lightsaber
right.
to get hit.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I thought the Vader transitions were seamless enough. I didn't get a total sense that like, oh, it's Hayden in the costume right now. So they're doing like an upward angle and clearly he's on a box. Cause my reading, three actors played him
I don't think Hayden was in the suit much.
Yeah. If it was like waist up, like cropped shot, that was like the time when Hayden Christensen was in it. If it was like more of an acting talking scene, but you could see his whole body, that was the other guy. And then there was a stunt coordinator guy who was, I think, the biggest of the three.
Right.
The other guy was big too, but the stunt guy
because
was
David Prowse was 6'8".
Yeah,
right. And Hayden Christensen isn't.
Yeah, so you need a big guy. And so
Which is why Sheamus played him in Rogue One, the pro wrestler Sheamus.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
But yes, because the person who played Darth Vader originally was a British bodybuilder.
Yeah. Right, he was a big
guy. And in canon, Vader's supposed to be like over 7 feet tall.
No, I think he's supposed to be approaching. I think he's supposed to be the 6'8".
Yeah.
Apparently, but still, 6'8 is huge.
Yeah. Star Wars universe
I'm 6'3". Imagine me with 5 inches and wearing all black. You would run away too.
Star Wars is a lot like the WWE universe where it's like your build is 7 feet, but you're really 6'10".
Yeah, exactly.
Or 6'8",
exactly.
Or whatever. It just depends on,
that's
you know,
a good point.
But it does give you like, you get that like, he's really big, guys. He's bigger than most
standing
of the people you
7'11".
Right, yeah.
The Great Khali is actually like 7'1".
Like standing at 8 feet tall.
I know. Yes, they always made these guys bigger than they are. Yeah. But let me ask you about this one little issue. In the very first episode, when the Inquisitors come and look for the Jedi, and you have the other, who is the other Jedi? It's not, obviously, not Kenobi. It's not Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, Benny Safdie.
Okay, yeah, his
Ankat
character.
Ankat Jams.
Ankat Jams.
Nari, yeah. Okay, anyways.
Brother of Ankat Jams.
Ankat Jams.
You know, you have, which, by the way, love the idea of trying to hurt someone else to force the Jedi out of hiding.
In
great
fact,
idea.
It's a trick that Darth Vader uses in Empire Strikes Back.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. It's exactly right. So it's kind of cool to see those throwbacks. But then you know what I'm going to say.
Yep.
These very powerful Jedi we now, if you didn't know that at that point in the movie.
Dark Force users.
Right. Have a guy who literally flips over an awning or like the equivalent of a couple beach chairs.
Yeah, and he drops an awning in front.
That's what it is. And they're like, way to get around that. And I didn't get if that, again, I know a lot of the motivation ends up being, well, they don't have to go get him. They're doing something else, or they've learned to restrain themselves or whatever. But in that moment, it didn't really seem like they had a reason to do that.
I mean, I think, okay, let me play the advocate for a second and say, Reva thought he was a shrimp and didn't need to be chased, and the Grand Inquisitor knew that his fear was enough to trace him, himself.
Right. Okay.
But yes, I agree. Did not need to drop the awning to make that point. It was just a little superfluous. Do you know what? I kind of think it was an Indiana Jones nod.
Okay.
I kind of think it was that kind of a thing.
Well,
I think it was a joke almost.
Because people might say like, well, you're reading too much into that. But the reality is somebody in a room, probably a lot of people in a room, wrote down actor does this, then shot of this, then frame up this.
Sure.
This must drop.
I kind of think
they play
it.
Every single thing has to be planned out that's on screen. So there's always at least some. It may just be the personal writer's preference of like, I'd like something to fall here.
Benny Safdie might have accidentally run into a pole and it dropped an awning. And then they thought, you know what? That looks kind of funny.
Well, you've heard about with Top Gun Maverick, for those who haven't seen it, but even if you have or have not, this isn't a spoiler, but there's a sequence where a plane flies by as there is a very low pass,
right,
and the set moved because of the actual air being moved by the real plane that flew over it. They did not plan for this. It kind of fell apart, but it looked so good on camera. They're like,
we're just gonna leave it. Yeah.
So it could, you're right. It could have been something as simple
happy
as
little
that.
Accidents like that.
I do think sometimes Star Wars is a universe where everybody has a name. There's like a thing going on around right now that's like Dupe Shitto or something. It's just like, I forget what it is. And I will.
There's always going to be like a lore and a name, and there's going to be 9,000 people who really love that character.
That character is Dupe Shitto. And this is his backstory, and this is the planet he's from.
And there's a chance he's getting a movie at some point.
His people has two stomachs.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly right. Yes, of course.
Dupe Shitto.
So there's reasons why, as Star Wars fans, sometimes you're like, I don't think that particular part made any sense.
I need to pay as much attention to that.
If we had as many other, if all other movies had the Star Wars level of scrutiny on them, we'd probably find lots of things where like, well, that seemed kind of dumb that guy could get away in that moment. Because we're not thinking about, well, 17 other times I've seen this guy on screen, he did exactly this. And this one time he did not. So that's why Star Wars fans get that way.
To be fair.
Because they put it all in front of you and make you analyze
it. I talked about, well, you know, Darth Vader usually only wields a lightsaber with one hand.
That's
so when
what
he grabs it with two. Yeah, I know.
Right.
I am that person.
Well, but when they are going to that level of detail with the writing and everything they're showing you, and then suddenly
and then an awning falls.
Was there a reason for that, or did it just kind of, they just did that? I don't know.
What about the return to the roots of it kind of being an allegory for World War II? And when Leia and Obi-Wan are first trying to escape and they get on that guy's like bus thing.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
And he's like just like the a happy go lucky guy, but like he's got like the Empire logo right. on it, and he's like, mm-hmm. Oh, you stormtroopers need a ride?
Voiced by
Zach Braff.
Yes.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
I didn't get that. Okay.
One of the few sort of like blink and you'll miss it cameos, as far as I know, of the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, you're exactly right. Where it's like, this guy seems perfectly nice. He's just like he's a truck driver and he's going to give you a ride. And also he's a Nazi. Like, oh, and he's like, you might want to check out these suspicious characters, you know, I got here.
Right. Yeah. There was a lot. I thought there was a lot of that being said too, unsaid, but
we haven't talked about Indira Varma at all, by the way.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You're right. Yes, that's right.
My brain jumped three to her holding the grenade.
She saves them in that moment. Right.
And I thought her character was great. I thought the way she set up the path was great. I thought she was super well written. I also loved that she was the first person we've ever seen actually use a thermal detonator.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that she's the first one we've ever seen.
Because, you know, in Return of the Jedi, Leia pretends she's going to use the thermal detonator and everyone freaks out. We actually get to see her like pull the pin on the grenade and just let it, you know,
that's
drop
right.
it.
Am I remembering correctly that she attempts to fake being a triple agent?
Yes.
When she gets found out, right?
Yeah,
that happens, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I like that. You know, she's actually, I tricked them, so I'm still with you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and
Reva's just like, okay, fine. I have other things to deal with right now.
She's like, I'm tricking them also, actually. So
yeah.
Well, but you know what? Both of those, I thought in that moment, both performances there kind of did show that, yeah, these are two people who are still trying to, well, in one case, you have someone who does know what she's doing and she's trying to get the other one to believe that she's not doing that.
And by the way, I just realized Reva straight up says, like, I like a good liar.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
I think maybe we sold that a little short initially of like, no, she
maybe
third sister is actually with this whole thing. Like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm doing the thing right now that serves me best.
That's
her motivation the whole way through, is I'm only going to do the thing that serves me best. And so then she's questioning that quite a bit more than I think I initially got when I was watching
it. Right now you're either telling the truth and that keeps my cover good, or you're lying to me and you're actually doing what I want to happen.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
So
yeah, either way. It's very interesting.
Because as Star Wars always does, if the hero gets out, it's because someone has it's because I put a bug on them.
Yes,
or I put a tracker on them.
Of course, there's always a tracker. There's always a bug.
Yeah.
Yeah. Overall, I really enjoyed how all of this went in this series. I will recommend to anyone who is, you know, the next time there is a thing, the next series we get, whatever it is, which I guess will be back to Mandalorian soon enough.
Andor is the next series we get,
Andor,
is actually
right.
set in this exact same time period.
Okay.
So we're getting a lot of this sort of post Battle of Endor stuff, and that's great, and I want to keep getting it. We are going to keep getting it, but it's cool to see we're also going to start getting some of this between the prequel and the original trilogy.
Yeah.
Timeline.
Well, I'm good with that, but I'm just saying, I think the way to watch those is, like, I watched 3 on Monday, 2 on Tuesday, and then got up Wednesday morning when the 6th episode came out and was done. So by like Sunday at 9 p.m., had not seen one of these.
Right.
By Wednesday at 9 a.m., I'm the expert. Lots of other people are at work like, oh, I didn't get to see it yet. So it's a weird way to live is what I'm saying. But if you can do it, if you can hold off until almost all
nice
of them are out,
you can get it.
That's the way to do it, I think.
I think the series that are more like long movies like this should be the ones that get dropped all at once. The weekly stuff doesn't do it for me with these ones.
You brought this up earlier, and I think it's a good point that we watch TV differently.
Yeah.
Like, series were made for when TVs didn't have a capture device on them or a, you know, way to go back.
And so you could drop in on any episode. And if you knew the characters, you know what's going on. But if you missed, if this was in live time and you missed 2 weeks and tried to watch another episode,
you'd
be like,
no idea what's going on.
Where are they now?
One, Disney isn't going to do that because it keeps their subscriber counts up. By having to watch it over the multiple months.
You can't have one free month trial and watch the whole thing.
But,
you're right.
But I would also say, like, I don't know. I like the anticipation. There are very few things in my life that make me feel like a kid on Christmas. one, I'm Jewish, and two, I don't like surprises. I'm a person in my real life. I don't like to be surprised. I like anticipation. I like to know a thing is coming and get excited for it, which is why I love spoilers. I don't care to be surprised. I want to be excited for the thing I know is coming. This is one of the few times in my life I get to feel like a kid on Christmas. Like, I didn't sleep well the night that the first couple of episodes dropped, which was a good thing because they dropped them early and I got to watch them before I even went to bed.
Well, so, to your point, though, if you like the anticipation and watching every week and waiting for those, if they do it that way, you can still get that. And then I can still let them all build up, watch them all at once.
And I can, enjoy that. Exactly. That's fair.
And this
I
one was short them. Enough, too, where you didn't have to wait that long, because it was only five weeks.
I can watch an episode three times on the Wednesday, and then the next Wednesday watch the new episode three times. And by the time I've gotten to the end of the series, I've watched the whole series three times through, and I am an expert.
Yeah, the difficult part is if you are very online in the world of science fiction or Star Wars or any of this or whatever series you like. And then you try to do what I was just talking about. I have three kids. A lot of my followers are not Star Wars related.
Yeah.
So I didn't see really anything on Kenobi other than like the Disney Plus ads saying Kenobi out now, stream it now, you know? So I didn't get any spoilers.
You don't talk to me enough.
No, and that's also on purpose.
All I would have wanted to do
is on purpose when this stuff comes out. I can't talk to you.
Everything about Kenobi. And I put my arms in the air like Kermit. Yeah,
that's exactly right.
Yeah. So anyway, I can't recommend it highly enough. I mean, even Chops, who always has the only bad thing you've said about it is, you know, some of the backgrounds were a little cheap looking.
That's if they want to go cheap. I think that would be a fun one. Do a like a sitcom type series of just normal people. No Jedis, no bounty hunters, no Sith, no Empire, no stormtroopers. Just like people who are like, did you see they blew up Alderaan?
Yeah.
That was a bit much.
I do have to say,
like an episode of just normal people living somewhere in the galaxy.
I really love moments like that in Star Wars. Like when Cobb Vanth says, when the Death Star blew up. No, the second one. And they like, I'm with you where it's like, this is casual. Yeah. They're in a bar having a drink. And he's like, when the second Death Star blew up. We were all blubbing. Yeah.
You know what you could
Did you hear about this Vader guy? They're saying he became good.
Dark Vader?
it's hard to get around this with Star Wars. If the stormtroopers were not based on perhaps the most vile army and police force ever assembled in world history, having those moments they had in The Mandalorian where they can't hit anything with their blasters, having a series of those two guys. Then walking around the Death Star doing things while crap is going on around them.
There is a comic book series of these two stormtroopers that are like hapless and are the guys that ruin everything.
Great.
And that exists. Go find it. But I will say in A New Hope, when Obi-Wan goes to the reactor core, there's the two stormtroopers. Like, have you seen the new TC-16s? They're literally talking about hot rods in the background.
That's right. Yes, right.
Yeah, I mean, it's been there since the beginning. But yes, that is some of my favorite Star Wars.
That's to your point of if you want to do a sitcom, you could do it that way. And I bet it would be more well-received. As long as you had them, they have to be stationed on an outpost where they're barely getting any news. They hate their jobs. And they're kind of questioning whether or not they want to do this. And then a bunch of just stuff breaks and they've got a, you know, random weirdness happens.
Drops a rock on their head and they're like, crap, stinking teddy bear.
They can't have stakes.
Like, say their speeders are broken and they're like, oh, they won't authorize the shipment for this. And it's like, because they're spending all the money on the Death Star.
Right.
I like the idea of like the Empire pinching pennies to the outside. I think that would be a funny plot line.
That happens in Rebels. Thrawn is like, listen, the Death Star is a waste of money. We need to build these super advanced space fighters that can stand up to the X-Wings and they're just like, well, but we need all the money for Grand Moff Tarkin's pet project. Literally, that is a thing that comes up in Star Wars Rebels.
That's great.
The sitcom is Greef Karga. Carl Weathers' character and the blue guy, Horatio Sands' character.
That's
the sitcom, by the way. Of them like just the day to day of running things on their planet. And
what do you mean we're out of blue milk?
Well, go milk the funny looking thing with four big boobs. Drink it right out of the
teeth. But here's the question: how many stomachs? That's what we don't know.
Four, because they're based on cows.
Four. Oh, there you go. Right.
Anyway.
Not two stomachs.
We started to say this. I can't recommend highly enough. Go watch Obi-Wan Kenobi. I'm excited to now watch the prequels and then Obi-Wan Kenobi, and then the original trilogy, like, not back-to-back. I guess maybe over, like, a 24-hour period I could do that. But anyway, go watch it.
Enjoy.
JD T-Bone Smith, thank you for joining us here on Nerd Association once again. Y'all, you can hear T-Bone every day, of course, on Common Man and T-Bone on 97.1 The Fan, 3 to 6 p.m. if you listen to the live radio. Or, of course, you can stream all the episodes online at 97.1thefan.com. Also, Chops and I are on the most recent episode of Bone and Beam United, which is
our soccer podcast that we do.
Give us the elevator pitch.
Well, we have decided, basically, there are fans in Columbus who like soccer, and so we talk about soccer to those fans, but we are fans of the crew. Beam is a fan of Manchester United, the Premier League English soccer. So we talk mostly.
I'm a big West Ham guy.
Are you a West Ham guy? There you go. Perfect. That's your new team because of the movie that we watched. Yes. But you can hear Chops and Daniel both talking about Green Street Hooligans, movie that I had them hop on and review. Very graciously of them to come on and break that down. That was a lot of fun. But typically what we talk about is U.S. men's national team and women's national team, Premier League and Champions League, and of course the Columbus Crew. So if you like soccer, you like those things, there you go. That's a podcast, Bone and Beam United.
And of course, they're a lot of fun to listen to because they are two consummate professionals and also goofballs.
I don't know about that. And we're drunk usually when we do it.
So sure, it never gets off the rails.
Never.
You can find Bone and Beam United wherever you downloaded this. You can find it there.
There you go.
Thanks for listening, folks. If you want to reach out to us, tell us some of your favorite moments from Obi-Wan Kenobi. Tell us what Star Wars you're looking forward to. You can find us on Twitter. Our handle is NerdAssoc. That's NERD_ASSOC. You can reach out to us via email, nerdassoc@gmail.com. Let us know what you'd like to hear us talk about next. Maybe even come on and be one of our nerds. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.